If we're ever going to tackle the problems of the 1970s, we need all the strength a young man can give. Bill McKay has it. The conviction to push for real solutions to the problems of unemployment, poverty, and crime. The determination to put some action back into the United States Senate. The energy to fight the special interests on behalf of all the people of California. For a better way, Bill McKay.
I fail to see the humor. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the runs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks. And last week, we talked about Quiz Show. And this week, due to a Robert Redford connection, we will be discussing The Candidate from 1972. And for the 224th time, I'm joined by
Brendan Fitzpatrick, and I am excited to be your next state senator.
Are we like the two senators of the Movie Ladder Podcast because we're the two hosts?
I mean, people often say to us they fail to find the humor in our podcast. So,
true. Yes. What we have in this room is a bunch of lazy dilettantes. I also thought about opening up that one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
We want Bill. There's got to be a better way.
It's got to be
hope
a better
and change.
Way,
make America better great again. Just kidding. Yep. No. Yes. Talking about The Candidate, it is election season. It is an election year. We're talking about a 52-year-old election movie. Then at the end of the episode, we will decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by you, the listeners, and ones that we brought as your hosts. We will be spoiling The Candidate, and I think you should watch this movie if you've never seen it.
I think so, too.
Holds up very, very well. Probably better now than in 1972, even.
I think that there's a whole range of reasons why it was important for the moment in 1972 that I can't wait to get into that are relevant in a different way today than they were when the movie was made in 72. So I'm really excited
we'll
to get in on that.
So we will be spoiling The Candidate. If you have not seen it, shamefully, it is not on any of the streaming services. It should be. Max really should have this on their service this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it is on YouTube. A certain listener, who you might hear in the feedback section, did send us a link to where this is on YouTube, and it seems like a legit movie on YouTube. It's you can watch the whole thing. That is where I watched it, so I didn't have to pay to rent it. But just be aware, it does end, like, the movie ends, and, it, like, before you even hit credits, the YouTube video ends. Like, it just ends. But
exactly,
it is the end of the movie. It's just very
It is. I was a little concerned. I had to run to the Wikipedia page to make sure I didn't miss something.
So. So it is on YouTube. We tweeted out the link to that YouTube link. Maybe it'll be on streaming at some point in the future. But if you just want to skip ahead here, we're going to be watching next week what we vote for, when we use our democratic powers to decide on for next week. Timestamp, as always, is in the description of this podcast. And Brendan, I figured out this week how to make that timestamp clickable in Spotify.
Whoa, look at you. How fancy.
I don't know about all other apps. I have not had a chance to test it, but I did go back and fix all of our episodes in the past,
nice.
Which is quite an undertaking. So when you're listening to this podcast, if you're listening on Spotify and compatible platforms, you can just click that timestamp and it'll jump you ahead to us discussing what we're picking for next week.
Yeah, I would never have no idea how to do that. I leave all that technical mumbo jumbo to you, as you are the trusted producer of this podcast. I do nothing except the back end notes.
And the speaking, the vocal. You contribute vocally to this podcast. So. I might have thrown my shoulder out, patting myself on the back, figuring out how to do that yesterday.
You might have a little bit,
But we always suggest you pause this podcast, go watch the movie. It is on YouTube. It is less than 2 hours, and then come back and listen to our discussion.
A swift 1 hour and 40 minutes.
And it is very swift if you're watching on YouTube. It is on the dot. Yes. And as always, submit your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com, and the Movie Ladder on Letterboxd. Brendan, happy election season.
Happy election season. Is it a happy election season? I'm not sure. But it is what it is. yet to be
determined.
I guess I should talk about the best thing I watched this week, huh?
I think you should. What do you vote for?
There's a few things I watched this week that were really, really great. One of which was the Taylor Swift Eras Tour documentary, which I watched the other night.
And had a documentary or concert film?
Well, the concert film, whatever you want to call it. Had an absolutely fabulous time texting with my sister the entire time I was watching that. But I want to talk about a little Nicolas Cage film that I went with a group of my friends to go see on Friday night called Mandy.
Mandy.
Came out in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
This film stars Nicolas Cage and Linus Roach, who people might recognize from the Law and Order franchise on NBC as the district attorney. He's playing a very different character in this film. This is sort of a wild sci-fi horror fantasy film starring Nicolas Cage. It reminded me a lot in some ways of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
Meets like a revenge thriller. Like, it was really, really incredible visually. Mm-hmm. I had a great time with this film, Zach. I had no idea what this movie was about going into it. Mm-hmm. All I knew was the title and that it starred Nicolas Cage. This movie is bizarre.
Yeah.
And bloody and violent and incredibly funny at times in like really odd ways where you're going to find your, I found myself laughing because of like how uncomfortable some of the stuff made me. I absolutely adored this movie. I thought it was really, really great. Really well done. Directed by a director I'm not even familiar with, Panos Cosmatos, who I had never heard of before. Yeah, what can I say? I had a really great time. Went to the Alamo Drafthouse with our buddy Mac and several other friends on a Friday night and just, you know, had a really great time sitting in the theater with a group of friends watching Mandy. Mm. Yeah, highly recommend if people have a chance to go check this out. In the I'm not sure why it's suddenly in theaters again right now. It's not like an anniversary or anything, but Alamo is doing a special screening. So if you have the chance, I highly recommend going and seeing it in a theater with a bunch of people who are having as good of a time as you hope to be.
Mm. I mean, Nicolas Cage does have a new movie that just came out.
Right.
I don't have the name of it off the top of my head, but maybe that's why the movie.
Dream Scenario. But that came out.
No, not Dream Scenario. It's another one. It's one that just came. It's one that like just came out this weekend.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Mandy. My brother went to it last night. I don't remember what the name of it is.
Gotcha.
So yeah. maybe that was why it's in theaters. But yeah, Mandy was one of the early movies I watched for my original movie ladder.
Nice.
And yeah, I just I don't remember a ton about it. I remember it was bloody. I remember it was crazy. Probably wouldn't be a bad one to like.
Yeah, you should revisit it. Yeah.
And it does also have has Andrea Riseborough in it, right?
Andrea Riseborough, yes. She of the infamous Oscar Hustle.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So that would be interesting to check that out. Mandy takes place in 1983, it says. Isn't 1983 the year?
Yeah, it is very much a send-up of 80s horror as well, like the 80s camp style horror movies of that era. Yeah, definitely. You can feel the fingerprints of 80s horror and 80s action in the film as well. Yeah,
I was going to say 83 is the year that we haven't done a movie from yet, but that's actually 1984, not 83. That is the year. Because if you go back through our we've hit every year up to 1984, and we have not hit 1984 yet on this podcast.
Should we just, since we're starting in 1972, do we just go through and do 76, then 80, then 84, then 88, and just keep doing election year movies?
Oh, I see. Yes. Maybe. To be determined. So
yeah, to be determined. What's the best thing you watched this week, Zach?
Best thing I watched this week was not Civil War. It was Incendies, which is an early Denis Villeneuve movie. It is from 2010. So it is, I believe it's before Enemy. It's obviously before Arrival. Blade Runner 2049. Enemy was 2013, before Sicario, before Prisoner. Wow. So this is like his last non-fully English language movie. And this movie was absolutely blew me away. Like, so Denis Villeneuve, I feel like even when his movies don't totally work for me, like Enemy sometimes, like I've seen twice and it's good, but I think it's like sort of confusing for the sake of being confusing sometimes. Mm-hmm. But like I feel like his movies are always really just thought-provoking, really good showings. Like, just they come together. Like, they just remind me of, like, a really great season of TV. And that's kind of what this Incendies reminded me of. It's, like, a really, really good season of TV. I had it on my watch list for a while, and I'd wanted to watch it since I revisited Dune, because this was his one movie I hadn't seen yet. And I can't recommend this movie highly enough. Like, this just really, really came together. It's about a brother and sister, twin brother and sister. And the movie starts with their mother passes away, and they receive her will with some instructions for some things that she wishes for them to do before before she can be laid to rest. And so you're kind of following them kind of unraveling this mystery, but then you're also seeing backstory, like their mother's backstory, and the vignettes are kind of interwoven together. Like, it reminded me a lot of Lost in that way, where the flashback in the present time, they kind of mirrored each other in different ways. And it's just, it's one of those movies that just, like, I was so gripped through the whole thing. It really, really, like, one of the best movies I've watched in a long time.
We love that Denis Villeneuve over here. Yes. You should put the name of that in the show notes so people know how to spell it. Because it can make it a little easier for people to find.
I'll spell it right now. It's I-N-C-E-N-D-I-E-S. It means fires in French, because he is French Canadian. Also, if you go to his filmography, you can find it. If I forgot to put it in the show notes, which I might. There was one. Oh, if you go to my letterbox, you'll see I rated it 5 stars, and that would be an easy way to find it as well.
Five stars automatically. Well,
warm and fuzzies.
Worm and fuzzies.
It's not a warm and fuzzies movie.
Worm and fuzzies?
Yes. Not quite. You can see a lot of things, especially in Arrival, that he like themes that he uses in Arrival, but also there's desert war scenes in this, and I think that, like, a lot of that, like, takes on a different meaning having seen the Dune movies. Gotcha. So and where did I watch this movie? It is I got it from I watched it on Tubi. I got it from the library, but I didn't end up watching the library disc. I did watch it on Tubi. Does have ads, which are kind of intrusive. You can get it on Mubi as well, which I don't have a subscription to right now, but I would recommend doing it on Mubi instead of Tubi. Okay. But Mubi, Tubi. Again, this is another one that should be, like, on the streaming services, especially because he's, like, in the news right now. He's, you know, with everything he's done with Dune, people should be revisiting his
movie. Every Denis Villeneuve movie should be on Max right now with everything happening with Dune.
Or something. I don't know what or something is this. This is independent. I think it did win one of the, like, Palme d'Or or one of the
Cannes.
The film prizes, the film's festival prizes. So nice. Just fantastic movie. Highly recommend. Highly recommend it.
Well, I will be sure to add it to my list.
Cool. Yes. Also, let's just transition. I thought The Candidate was a fantastic movie. I am just going to, like, spoil my rating right now not my rating, but my feelings on it.
Please.
1972, The Candidate, starring Robert Redford as the titular candidate.
The titular candidate.
Yes. He is running for state senator, or not state senator.
National U.S. Senator for California. He'd be the junior senator for California.
Senator from California, and we follow him along the campaign trail. He is brought in really as kind of a patsy, like, he's expected he's going to lose, and so he can say whatever he wants. And of course, his message starts resonating. He builds a following, and spoiler for the end of the movie, he does end up winning that seat.
Yeah, pretty wild. Who would vote for Robert Redford in this film, right? I mean, he's a very good candidate who basically, you know, is completely reluctant at first to say what he feels. And then he goes around, you know, doing all of the glad-handing campaign stuff that you do on the trail, talking to real people, shaking hands, hearing about issues. And he just starts speaking his mind and, like, conveying the real problems that have been a problem for not only California, but the nation for dozens of years that are still a problem today.
Yeah.
And he, you know, tries to say that he's going to be able to fix it. And the problem that you often run into with these types of movies, you know, when they finally, you know, that often happens to real politicians, is they make all these campaign promises. And then by the time they get to Washington, they realize how incapable of actually changing anything they really are. You know, which is why we still have a lot of the same problems we had back in 1972.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's it. This movie, you know, I think a lot of what happens in this movie, you mm-hmm. see in other movies. I think there's, you know, a lot for of sure. different election type movies that we might be able to pivot to. I mean, you yep. even see this in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which obviously yep. came out before The Candidate. But maybe that's a movie sure. that we end up doing next week where these outsiders come in. And you can see this in real life. Right. I was thinking a lot about Beto O'Rourke yep. watching this movie. Where
I was there, yeah.
He's the young, charismatic politician who's going to come in. And he's going to, and Barack Obama too, he's going to change the system. You know, he's going to yep. be that hope and change candidate. He's comes from a real perspective of like the, you know, not the political Washington machine.
Yep.
And I like calling it the Washington machine, like the Washington
yeah,
machine.
Yeah, the Washington machine is good.
Yeah. I like where that, he, that, yeah. but then as he, you know, a lot of times these movies, you see them then get into power and then they just yep. become kind of part of that system. Right.
Exactly. And you see that sort of starting to happen with him as he's going too, mm-hmm, where yeah. people start to challenge what he means by saying certain things, and he realizes that he has to temper or tailor the way he phrases some of his own personal values in order to, you know, apply to a wider margin of voters. And mm-hmm. the whole goal, like we set up with the Peter Boyle character in the beginning, who's actually goes to him in order to get him to run so that he'll lose. He writes down on a matchbook, the deal is you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, that's the thing. The entire thing is you're being set up to lose to this longstanding senator, but, you know, so that he has a worthy opponent. And we don't want you to embarrass yourself, but you can't win.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the whole thing is, you know, it goes the way it's going to go. Zach, did you have, see, here's what I was really thinking about while watching this movie, and a lot of this was because of the way the movie was shot. In some of the scenes, there's this real documentary political film style mm-hmm. that reminded me a lot of newsreel footage from documentaries involving the assassination of RFK, where he's standing in the lobby of the Beverly yep. Wilshire Hotel in Los Angeles, where, you know, this film takes place, talking to a crowd, and he's like, we're on to Chicago and let's win there. And he does the hair flip, and then he gets shot. He goes back behind the podium into the kitchen and is assassinated, mm-hmm. you know, in real life, RFK, you know, RFK. Yep. And throughout this film, I'm just on the edge of my seat. Correct. Because yep. Robert Redford's mannerisms, his look, the way he is staged in this film, on this stage, reminded me so much of RFK. Mm-hmm. I really thought this film was going to end with an assassination.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And I'm glad that it didn't. I'm glad that it
subverted. I am so glad it didn't.
But I was on the edge of my seat for most of the second half of this film mm-hmm. because I was getting the same thing. I was trying to put myself, and I did look up kind of what where we were politically when this movie yep. came out and exactly. you know, kind of current events that happened. Obviously, this is before All the President's Men, but I was thinking yep. a lot about
four
All
years,
the President's Men.
4 years before, yeah.
Yeah. And but so the scene that really made me think that we were foreshadowing an assassination is we cut to some political strategists, and I don't even know who they were exactly. They're in a hotel room yeah. and they get like the food delivered to them, and they're talking yes. through a parade route. And yep. that
exactly
parade, like I was thinking so much about the JFK assassination at
yes,
that point.
Absolutely. And
I was like,
that too.
I was like, oh my god, they're gonna have him on a parade. And then he's sitting on the top of the convertible going through this parade
with his wife in a beautiful dress, like with yeah. the confetti flying down. And
mm-hmm. yeah, so I was reminded so much of the JFK assassination, and then but also like the way he looks and mm-hmm. him being in the hotel at the end of the movie and being mobbed by people at the, yeah. like when he's walking through the hallway exactly. at the very end and he barely can get through. I was like, oh, somebody's gonna come up and shoot him. Yeah. I was totally expecting an assassination at the end. Instead, we get a graduate style ending, right?
Where yeah, like, we get a beautiful graduate.
All right,
graduate
he won.
Style.
He accomplished Whoops. What yeah. he accomplished what they weren't necessarily setting out to do, but he accomplished it. He won, and he's the senator, and he's terrified. And like, I love that you see that he is just yep. like, oh no,
what do we do
like,
now?
Yeah,
what
like now
next?
What?
Yeah, mm-hmm. now what?
Yeah. And I really liked his father coming to him at the end. His father like is up and down with the support that he gives him throughout yeah. the movie. But his father comes up to him at the end of the movie after he won, and he says, you're a politician now. Like, it's just like that moment.
Congratulations. Like, you're not a real human being anymore. Yeah, you're a politician. Yeah,
you're part of, like,
yep. now you're part of the system. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, his father is a former California governor himself, the character. Mm-hmm. And so he, like, seems to never have really wanted his son to get into politics, or at least been, like, disappointed by, like, the fact that he didn't, and is a little dubious of it when he does, which is why he withholds his support at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. And then he really comes around as he starts making these speeches and putting out these ads where he's, you know, gonna change the system. There's gotta be a better way is such a great slogan.
Yeah. A better way with McKay.
Yeah,
yeah. Bill McKay. There's gotta be a better way. Yeah. No, I think that's that is a Hollywood scripted, mm-hmm. political slogan.
Yeah,
I
thought it was absolutely perfect. The other way that this film is really resonant for the time is not just the RFK thing in 68, where RFK is running for the Democratic primary and is assassinated, but you have to remember the political moment we were still in 1972 and 71 when this film was being made, with the Vietnam War and mm-hmm. all of these Democratic candidates running on a hope and change and let's build a better tomorrow and get out of this war that is tearing America apart. And I was actually really surprised that the Vietnam aspect is not touched on at all in this film. No. Instead, it's all local issues and local politics and national politics like abortion. The only real mention we get of Vietnam is one of his friends at the beginning of the film seems to be a Vietnam vet because he's wearing an army jacket, and he, like, refuses to be a part of his team and shake his hand as mm-hmm. he starts getting more popular. He's yeah. like, no, forget it. We're not friends anymore. You're now part of the system. And so,
yeah, it is interesting that they shy away from Vietnam. I have no idea why. I mean, maybe it's just because this movie already had so much in it. Maybe it's because what I love about this movie so much is that this movie is not, like, this movie could have been made yesterday. And that is what really, really, like, won me over in this movie is halfway through when we get the debate and they're talking about the different issues. And that could be a Biden-Trump debate. I mean, like, that really could be a debate between two candidates right now.
It's Nixon-JFK and it's also Biden-Trump. Like, it's the Obama-McCain. It's literally the Obama-McCain debate.
Yeah, that's probably from 12 years ago.
Like, it reminded me a lot of those. Yeah.
And I think about it too, and I'm like, oh, 1972, like, that wasn't, you know, that was a while ago, but it's not that long ago. And then I did the math in my head mm-hmm. and it's 52 years old. And I'm like, my God, we're still arguing the exact same issues 52 years later, half a century later, we are still in a debate arguing about abortion. As we were 52
and
years ago.
And welfare and jobs and unemployment. Yeah,
and just in half a century, we've made no progress. I mean, we've made some progress, but we're still like, we're not any closer.
Yeah.
Right. And we're half a century from this movie being made. Yep. And these things, and this, when I was watching the movie last night, I had to pause the movie. I was so like I was so gutted at that realization as I was like doing the math in my head at how old this movie is and how it could be made today. And that's why I'm like, this movie really needs to be out on Max or one of these streaming services. Like, people need to be watching this movie right now because it is just insanely relevant 52 years later.
Yeah, I mean, literally, there's a documentary on Apple TV right now called Girl State that is a sequel to the previous documentary called Boy State, where the main issue brought to the table for the Girl State debates in that documentary is Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
Like, right. That's...
I did have Boy State potentially on my list for... I have it on my list to watch this year because I have an election watch list, which I want to watch... Stuff I want to watch before the election. And this was one of the movies on that list, as well as The War Room, which is another one that could come up. It's not on my list because I just recently watched it, but also a movie all about the campaign trail. It's about the Clinton campaign trail. Highly recommend that one. That one is on Max.
Really great. Yeah.
Yeah. I had that on my list.
D.A. Pennybaker.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. About the raging the Cajun
Clinton,
guy.
Yeah. The Clinton. Yeah. The Clinton campaign.
Stephanopoulos and what the Cajun.
And dude, whatever
his name is. yes. The other thing, so you're talking about like the timeliness of this, right?
James Carville, sorry. My brain went, the Rage of Cajun, because I remember it from, if you recall, there's the movie, Old School, where Jeremy Piven is the dean, and he introduces the debate coordinator for one of the rounds of the competition, and he calls him the Rage of Cajun,
Mr. Yeah, that's James always Carville. I also always think of that, yes.
That's where my brain went to remember the name.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were trying to make a different point.
I wanted to go back to what you were talking about with Vietnam and like that is no real mention of Vietnam in this movie. Yeah. And I think like that is effective because it doesn't tie this movie to that era.
And I think that's
I don't know if when they were making this movie, if they thought like, the issues that we're debating, like those are still going to be the issues we're debating 52 years later when Michael Ritchie was making this movie. But what I found fascinating is I was like, okay, so I'm reminded of JFK, right? I'm reminded of RFK. Yep. There's a lot of times where I'm reminded of Reagan, and this is pre-Reagan. Yep. But, again, this is California. I mean, just the idea of California politics, charismatic guy.
When Nixon was also a senator from California, I believe. Yeah.
And that was the one I was thinking a lot about because I was like, oh, Nixon was a senator in California. There's a lot of references to football in this movie. And Nixon was a football player. I do want to go back to the football stuff because that popped up a lot. And so I looked up, I was like, oh, when did Watergate happen? Well, Watergate happens June 29th, 1972.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, did this movie come out like shortly after Watergate? This is 1972. Do you know the date this movie was released, Brendan?
Please tell me it was the same weekend as Watergate.
No, it's 12 days before. June 17th, 1972.
Incredible.
The fact that this movie's in theaters when Watergate happens is like, you can't
script
that. That is
you can't
insane.
Script that shit. No. It's mind blowing. Yeah. So, to go ahead and jump on the movie map, the star of that film, of All the President's Men, is going to be Robert Redford. That's God Woodward. Mm-hmm. So, he's going to be in two of the most important political films of the 1970s in a span of 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
All the President's Men comes out in 74, right?
76.
76? Okay, so 4 years,
I mean, an election cycle, right? The 72 election.
It's an election cycle, If we hadn't already done All the President's Men, we'd obviously be doing it.
Yeah, it's the very clear movie map.
Yeah.
And to even, to go to the Nixon of it all is when we have Bill in the back of the car, right? And this is kind of when he's, I think it's a little inconsistent. His character is a little inconsistent. Like, this movie is not perfect. I think there's some, tonal inconsistencies, character inconsistencies. But he's in the back of the car when they're driving. I believe this is when they're driving to the TV station.
When he's trying to do the speech in his head. And he keeps coming up with the fake bullshit answer.
Yeah, when he's becoming part of the system, right? But he says something about, something like vitriol towards his supporters where he says, all you middle-class honkies is what he says. And then he does the V sign with the same V sign that Nixon is famous for doing. And again, I was thinking so much about how he's changed from this this RFK, JFK hero figure to now being Nixon. But again, this is before Watergate. I'm sure people I don't know what the sentiment on Nixon was right before Watergate, but.
He was reelected in 72. So, he obviously, was going to be okay.
Yeah. I think the fact that he has that moment of vitriol and does the V sign, which you associate so much with the two hands Nixon. Up doing the V with Nixon. I think that
it's also a mirror. It's also a mirror of when he goes into the neighborhoods in lower Los Angeles and is talking to all the, African-American supporters, and the one lady gives him the peace sign with the third finger, which I believe I didn't write it down. It was peace and go fuck yourself or something like that.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's sort of a mirror of that moment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cause what he really means is the sign that was given to him. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I think all of the stuff with him, where he's doing the same speech over and over and over again. I think that his character, the arc that his character takes doesn't totally track with him being this this hope and change character with a lot of ambition and
because
and
he virtues. Doesn't have a lot of ambition. I don't think he really wanted to do this in the first place. And that's the thing is that he gets intoxicated by the machinery of the system, because but we also don't see him like really reveling in it, which is weird. Like, he doesn't seem to be enjoying himself,
right,
except for the affair he has in the deep background, which would have been foreground in a modern telling of this, mm-hmm. when he's sleeping with like the lady who shows up to all his events, mm-hmm. and all the only hint that you get that he actually had the affair is he gives her his number, and then you see her come out of the hotel room before him when he goes in to talk to his dad's friend who's there to meet him before the parade.
That's like the union guy, right? Is that before scene with the union guy? Yeah.
And I
think that's where I got hung up and watching this movie. And I was like, wait, am I missing something? Cause I do feel like it's like, so like, he doesn't want to do it at first. And then it seems like he is like very much like speaking from the heart and things that he believes in about like pollution and, you know, and jobs and opportunities for everybody. But then he's just like being the machine where he's just repeating the same speech over and over again. And then he has the vitriol, like, he's kind of all over the place in terms of like, I don't really know what Bill wants. Like,
I agree. Yeah.
And maybe that's the point, that Bill doesn't know what he wants. And then he gets elected and it's like, oh, I don't really know why I was doing this in the first place. Yeah.
The part of the thing is, though, I mean, this is really a early echo of films that we're going to get many of in the 90s, as far as political films that are made about a candidate who's an unconventional candidate who is running for some type of office, mm-hmm. and, you know, they're not expected to win, or, you know, I mean, there a lot of them may come up in suggestions later, but
yeah, I have a lot on my list.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies like this that get made in the 90s that are a lot more salacious. There's not really a lot that's salacious about this film. I think that what I admire about it is it does feel a lot more like a documentary. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how this would really go. It's not that exciting. It's not that flashy. You may feel a little bit tense, but you're never going to get the real inner thoughts of the candidate.
Yeah, I think the tension for both of us came from kind of adding that real world context on there. And
exactly.
And like thinking that we were seeing foreshadowing, that whether it was intentional foreshadowing or not, that we were both like, oh, well, this movie is going to, it has to end with some sort of bang. And instead it ends with almost the opposite, where it ends with such a whimper.
I really like what you said there about it ending like The Graduate, because this film comes out in 1972 and it is a good example of the type of nouveau, new tempo, new tone films that are made in the 70s that don't have big flashy endings. I mean, The Graduate is often cited, even though it came out in the 60s, as the first of these 70s style films that are going to be popularized by Robert Altman or Francis Ford Coppola's Conversation, that are going to be like much more nuanced and more internal as far as their tone and what they want you to take away from it. So this like really hit home for me as being a really good example of 70s genre and 70s noir.
Yeah. It, you know, there is that phrase, like, they don't make them like this anymore, which I think is like, I don't know if that's necessarily true. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little overused. But I do feel like this type of movie and like the grittiness of this, like if this was made now, like the number one movie that this is related to, that the letterbox point for this movie is The Ides of March, which I recently rewatched, and Ryan Gosling starring George Clooney. And like that one is much more kind of like the salacious election story and like the polished election
story. I just recently rewatched it too. Yeah. And it's,
yeah.
Yeah. If this movie was made now, you would see the affair, there would be a sex scene, and it would end with an assassination or some kind of big scandal. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie is pretty much beat for beat remade later with the real life Gary Hart story, where Gary Hart is this young upstart congressman who is running for president. He looks a hell of a lot like Robert Redford. I mean, he's played by Hugh Jackman in The Front Runner, and he's this really young, exciting change candidate in 1988. And a scandal, the first hint of a scandal unravels his entire presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. So, like, this movie now would be the, if it were made today, it would just be the Gary Hart story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, and I like that this is, you know, I'm sure it's based on, you know, based on some of the Kennedys and, mm-hmm. you know.
Like, there's a little bit of McGovern in there too.
Yeah. And I think like it almost feels like this could be written by a time traveler who's coming back with yes. the knowledge of candidates who come out. You know, Bill Clinton is another one who we haven't mentioned besides the War Room, but I think like that's another like young hope and change type candidate who's coming to break the wheel to steal from another property. Like I do think like there is that aspect of it. And I think also what works is just kind of how you talked about the documentary film style and like I love some of the camera angles. The way that like the characters, especially the two candidates, are shot like from below a lot, where there's like a giant light behind their head and like it's like you're looking up at them often, kind of like you know, Citizen Kane-esque a little bit. And I think the fact that you and I both watched this on YouTube and like it wasn't, you know, it's not an HD version of this movie. Like it's very like gritty, but it almost makes you feel like you are watching a piece of archival footage instead of watching a clean movie, which works so well for this film.
Yeah, I didn't really talk about my viewing experience yet. I did watch this on YouTube, but I watched it on YouTube with ads. And so that's one thing that really led to both the feel that I was not only watching a documentary, but I was watching like a political ad. Like I was just watching some guy run through all of his political ads for his latest political campaign. I mean, the YouTube ads were wild, Zach. They were pretty much every 5 or 6 minutes, even if it was in the middle of a scene. But at the same time, like for a movie like this, it didn't actually bother me because it felt like a mirror of what happens whenever I'm watching regular cable TV, where there's, you know, there are ad breaks, and then those ad breaks are smattered with political ads now.
Yeah.
You're going to get 2 or 3 political ads every ad break, at least here in D.C., for candidates in Maryland and candidates in Virginia, no matter what time of year it is. So, you know, that it really, like, gave me that feeling, and it kind of added to the ambiance of the film for me.
Yeah. And it's funny because whenever I watch something on YouTube, I have YouTube Premium. So like I never think about, because I get it for free with I use YouTube Music for my music, which I recommend. Gotcha. If you're listening to the music, instead of paying for Spotify Premium, pay for YouTube Premium, because you also get you get YouTube Music and YouTube Premium together for the same price. Nice. But so I never have ads on YouTube. So whenever I watch something on YouTube that isn't, like if I'm at a friend's place they put on YouTube and we have ads, I am like astounded the amount of ads that YouTube puts in middle. Like it's not like you're watching Hulu with ads where there's actual ad breaks. It's like, oh no, there's just like YouTube ad, YouTube ad.
Exactly. YouTube, like, yeah. And they're not even time coded, so you can't anticipate them at all. It just happens.
So I forget about that. Like when we tell people they can watch this on YouTube, it's like, man, if you can watch it, like I think I'm sure it'd be a better experience to watch this without ad breaks.
Probably,
I think another really interesting aspect of this movie is the fact that if you click over to genre on Letterboxd, the first genre is comedy. And if you look at the other movies Michael Ritchie has done, including you know, we did Bad News Bears last year, right? Yeah. Bad News Bears is a comedy. And he did the Fletch movies as well, at least the original two Fletch movies. The Golden Child, which I've never seen, but that's Eddie Murphy comedy.
Eddie Murphy, it's classic 80s comedy.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's like all of Michael Ritchie's movies are comedies. And this movie is considered a comedy. And the reason why I started this podcast with that line, I did fail to see the humor, is because, like, yes, I guess there is a dark comedy aspect of this, like a cynical comedy aspect of this, but I don't find this movie to be funny. I find this movie to be, like, very terrifying.
Yeah, and that's part of the thing is I think that, you know, as you talked about and as I talked about, I think the tension of seeing a young upstart candidate, Robert Redford, in this film framed the way it is made this movie feel more dramatic than it was definitely intended. I also think, like, I mean, as much as I have laughed at certain Robert Redford movies, I don't think of Robert Redford as a comedy actor necessarily. Like, I mean, the funny parts of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which make him up later, are not necessarily intentionally funny.
Yeah.
There, Robert Redford dramatically saying something very angrily that comes off funny to the viewer. But, like, yeah, I don't think that this movie is specifically a comedy, but I also can see from the humor of the late 60s, early 70s, why it might be. You know, I mean, there's stuff in Bad News Bears that was supposed to be comedy that, like, but that's more that the comedy didn't hold up.
Right. I remember when we talked about Bad News Bears, we talked a lot about how it felt like mean-spirited more than it felt funny. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, the one funny scene, I do think the scene where he goes to the television station, like in that scene, we get a little bit wacky, like where they tell Marvin, Peter Boyle's character, to grab a chair. And he uses the chair like a lion tamer to like keep them away so they can escape into the elevator. And then where I think this is like, I've never seen Robert Redford like this, where he just cannot contain his laughter because of the microphone. That is the part where
I started laughing the most, because I was laughing because he was laughing, and it was wonderful. Like, you don't see Robert Redford really laugh like that. And you know, back in the day, like many times, whenever we've had Brad Pitt and Robert Redford come up on the show, we talk about sort of how Brad Pitt is a time traveling Robert Redford, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that a lot in this movie too. Like, if you remade this in 1999 and cast Brad Pitt before the 2000 election, like, I think you would have had a banger of a film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that it would have been great. I think it would have been perfect. Mm-hmm.
I think also, like, the reason why, like, this movie, the way this movie ages, I was thinking a lot about, you know, how old is Robert Redford in this movie versus, like, how old was Joe Biden when Joe Biden started his political career, right? And I did look up their ages, and Robert Redford is 6 years older than Joe Biden. So, like, not that much older than Joe Biden, really. And, it's just, like, just the resonance this took on. I think, like, it really, like, as I was watching it, I thought, overall, like, I thought this movie, like, I was like, yeah, this is, like, pretty good. I see where this is going. I'm enjoying this. And then, you know, I think that debate scene comes about midway through the movie, and that's really when this movie flipped for me, and, like, just everything kind of came into focus, and I realized kind of just how this movie is aged 52 years later.
For sure. And this is the thing that I actually kind of like about this movie, is that his opponent, you know, isn't necessarily, like, set up to be villainous. Like, he's not, like, a huge dick. He's just sort of your standard Republican politician. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not, and he doesn't seem to be, like, an out-and-out awful human being, really.
Yeah. He's just...
He's ruined by the system.
Crocker Jarman is...
Jarman is terrible. It's a wonderful character name.
Yeah. Like, I see Crook right in there, that name, right? Like, or Croc, Cock. Like, you see, I feel like, especially that first name, I think that, like, has some aspects. But, yeah, he's not a MAGA Republican, right? He's a conservative Republican in the 70s.
Your typical conservative in the 70s who, you know. But he also, like, is there before McKay is when the wildfire breaks out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm presenting a bill to, you know, before the Senate to get, you know, emergency relief for the California wildfires, which, hey, guess what? Is still an issue today, the California wildfires.
Right. So, I mean,
you know, it's another one of those issues that is still a big deal, the environmental issues, especially in California with smog and pollution and oil. And
Well, and I think, like, that was a really good scene, because when they're in the car driving to the wildfires and Peter Boyle's Marvin says to him, like, you can't make this look like you're just trying to use this as a political, like, the fact that his gut instinct is like, I want to go out there and I want to help people.
Yeah.
And Marvin's like, you have to think about the optics of how this looks. Like, we can't look like you're trying to take advantage of this situation for political expediency, even though you want to help.
And then boom, that's exactly what Crocker Jarman does when he gets there.
Right. Because he's part of the system.
For him, because he's already part of the system.
Yeah. He's been in the system. I do think there's a great shot at the debate where we see the production room.
Yeah.
And we see their two images overlaid on top of each other. Just for like a split second.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's, you know, like, they are, like, that's how they're becoming similar, right? Like, they're on opposite sides of the aisle, but eventually they're both going to be kind of sucked up by the same political machine.
Yep. We mentioned Peter Boyle. I think he's really great as the political sidekick, chief of staff, whatever you want to call him, for Bill McKay. Michael Lerner is also in this film as like a, hey, it's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Staffer on McKay's staff. Really love seeing him pop up. But I didn't really recognize anybody else in this film. Did anybody really stand out?
No, I feel like there were people that looked sort of familiar. There's a guy who's on the campaign staff, and I don't even know what his name is. He's like a younger looking guy with blonde hair. I feel like he looked a little familiar, but I don't. I think he just had a familiar look to him. And then I think also, I think it might have been Alan Garfield. That might have been who he was, the actor who played him. But no, I mean, you know, outside of Michael Lerner, who like even 50 years prior, I would recognize the banker from Blank Check.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So yeah, no, I like seeing him.
We should talk about the amount of cameos in this film because there are so many LA and political cameos.
Okay.
George McGovern, the political candidate in 1968, pops up as himself. He would later run against Nixon and lose historically.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie Wood shows up as herself for a photo op in the hotel with McKay.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome. Like he has a whole conversation with her too.
I think I didn't realize that was Natalie Wood.
It was actually Natalie Wood. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize
it was actually Natalie Wood. Yeah. And let's see, was there anybody else that really stood out? Let's see, Terry McGovern as himself, not seeing anybody else whose name really. Oh, and Hubert H. Humphrey, who is also a Democratic candidate, also plays himself in the film. So there you go.
I didn't. Yeah. Maybe it's because, you know, I wasn't too involved. Like I wasn't alive then, right? So I don't really know the history. So I didn't pick up on any of those cameos. I did know Natalie Wood was in this, and I was looking for her, but I don't think she was ever mentioned by name.
She's after his very first rally speech, when like the big one in the his first big speech in the hotel. He says, you know, at his campaign donor thing, somebody, his staffer, I think it's Peter Boyle, said, Natalie Wood's here. She'd like to meet you. And he's like, okay. And they go backstage and they meet Natalie Wood. And
oh, okay. Yeah. So I just missed it.
Yeah.
I did want to talk a little bit because, you know, we had talked a lot about this month we were doing, you know, we had TV month, right? We had Pleasantville, which was all this about the sitcoms. We had Truman Show, which was about reality TV. Last week we had Quiz Show, all about game shows. And I think when we picked this, I was like, we both said, well, I guess TV month is going to end because we're going to be doing a political movie. Yeah. And no, this
made for TV candidate.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. No. So that's what we're getting, the debate on TV. We're getting interviews on TV. We're getting tons of kind of behind the scenes, behind the camera.
How you put a political ad together. We get lots of how you edit a political ad together.
Yep.
Lots of playing with the reel to reel like we had last week. This is basically like we are in the era. And this is another thing that, you know, to connect back to what you were talking about with last week with the Nixon Kennedy thing and how that reminded you of the two characters in Quiz Show, because we get like how to create a TV friendly candidate versus the old man, Crocker Jarman.
When they're putting the makeup on him and they're talking to him about how he sits and how he crosses his hands.
Exactly.
You know, like having his fingers interlaced and just, that we're getting like all of the TV aspects of being a candidate, which, I mean, it's obviously changed in 52 years, but there's a lot of it that's still very relevant.
Absolutely. Right? Because, I mean, you get a lot of that in the war room too, right?
With them advising
Clinton on how he should stand, how he should sit, how he should... We can't have them looking like this, but we can't have them looking like this.
And that we're getting that, like, then even the scene where he goes to the show, and I don't remember I don't have the name of the show written down, but where he can't stop laughing on the set. And the microphone is in front of him. And, you know, to tie back to last week, that show was sponsored by Rolex, right? Yep. So we're getting presented by a show.
We got a Geritol mention at the beginning, too, when they're talking about Crocker Jarman being presented by Geritol.
So we have a candidate, literally a candidate presented by a product.
I think it was a joke about his age because of Geritol being really popular, back in,
I wonder if Geritol was used. Probably not, but it's just an interesting connection that Robert Redford ended up directing Quiz Show, and Geritol was such a big part of Quiz Show.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, and we're getting, and then we also get all of the coverage of the actual of Election Day, right? That we're getting the like Nate Cohn or the Kornacki showing up. And this one is Dr. Dwight, who says that he gives them an 8% chance to win. And they're talking about the impact of the rain on voter turnout.
Yeah, especially in lower California where he's going to be more popular. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we're getting the TV news coverage of Election Day. Like, just again, like all of these different aspects of TV and how TV is involved in the political process. And this is early. I mean, you know, TV wasn't such a big part of the political process much before this movie came out. This is a relatively newer innovation, like you said, with the Nixon-Kennedy debates.
For sure. So to talk about the Nixon-Kennedy a little bit more, here's something I got to ask you that ties into this movie is we get a lot of talk about how his dad is a former governor of California. We meet McKay's dad at several points in this film. He starts taking an interest in his son's campaign once he realizes how popular he's becoming and tries to bring on a political strategist to help in the final days of the campaign. Back in the day, in the 1960 election, it is alleged that Joe Kennedy helped garner votes in the crucial state of Illinois to help John F. Kennedy win the presidency in 1960, and that without Joe Kennedy's interference, Kennedy would have lost to Nixon. Do you think, because we hear in this film that he unexpectedly got a larger majority in Northern California, where his dad is located, than he was expected to in the projections, McKay did. Mm-hmm. So do you think there's any kind of similar shenanigans that they're hinting at in this film?
I didn't get that, but I mean, that definitely could be the case. I thought, like, you know, we do have so much with that union boss and getting the endorsement of that union boss. And I thought, like, I really like that how, you know, Bill kind of holds his ground with, like, they meet the union, like, they meet in that hotel room, and he kind of holds his ground and doesn't give in to him.
He's like, I don't think I want to be friends. Yeah.
Right. And then we cut to the next scene, and that the union guy is introducing him on stage in front of all of those people. And it's like, where he really, that's kind of where he first blows up as this, like, major candidate celebrity, I feel like. I mean, he had been rising, but that kind of took him to another level. I mean, we are seeing people, and I couldn't tell which team they're on, like which candidate they're with, like changing the door hangers.
They're switching out the Jarman door knockers for the McKay ones. So the Jarman ones were the white ones, and then the McKay ones were the green ones, and they were swapping out the,
Yeah, could be. One of the things I really liked is at that, I think it was at the union, the speech in front of the union, is before then we see Jarman giving a speech, and it's like very 1984. He's in front of a giant face.
Yeah, he looks like somebody from 1984. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And he's in front of this giant face. Like the way it's shot is that Big Brother look, right? Like we're seeing, and we see a woman in the crowd, and I think she coughs. She does something that makes her stand out. I believe she coughs.
Oh yeah, she coughs and sneezes. Yeah.
And she's like a little bit larger woman, right? We see her in the crowd at the Jarman rep. Yeah. Right. So I wasn't sure like what was the significance, because she definitely stands out. She's not just like an extra. Yeah, but then we see the McKay rally where he's introduced by the union boss, and she is in the crowd of that one too. So I really like her being this symbol of that, these undecided voters or these voters who are flipping over from one candidate to the other. And the fact that we see her at one rally and then see her at the other rally.
I didn't notice her at the second. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And so
I thought that was I thought that was really effective when I saw her there. I was like, oh, he's gaining momentum and he's starting to flip over, you know, these voters that we're seeing. And so I thought that was really, really good too.
Nice.
So, and I like how there's the whiteboard that we see at one point, and we see like the different, the candidates and how close they are. It's like, you know, he's like 34%, and like the way that McKay is rising. And then, you know, one of the ones we get right before he starts making his rises, it's 49%, Jarman, 40% McKay, and 11% undecided.
Yep.
So, just so much the way that they talk about voter turnout and, you know, making sure everybody has a chance to vote and getting people out to vote. Like, it's all just the same stuff that we still hear in 2024.
Yep.
So, all right. Anything else that you want to make sure we touch on about this movie?
No. What do we do now?
All right. Well, we get to feedback. But of course, before we get to feedback, we get to box office for this movie, which there is no box office to verify. But you do have some notes that you wrote down.
Yeah, I got a couple of notes. I mean, obviously, the highest grossing film in 1972 is The Godfather, followed by Poseidon Adventure, What's Up, Doc, which we've done, and Deliverance at number four. The Candidate didn't do awful, but it wasn't one of the top grossing films of the year. And I wonder how much its box office was impacted, as you talked about, by the actual Watergate scandal and people not wanting to go to the theater to see this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I had it flipped earlier. When I said this movie came out June 17th, Watergate was June 29th. I'm sure people have already complained, but yes, I flipped those. I meant Watergate happened on June 17th. Yeah. This movie came out on June 29th. So this
June 29th, was, 2 weeks later. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks later. So actually, it's like worse. It's like very bad timing to release this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it made an estimated $2.5 million. I actually wonder if they rushed this into the theaters in June because of Watergate breaking. Huh? And then maybe it was initially supposed to be a November released around election time.
I wouldn't think so. The only reason why is because I just don't think like that can happen as quickly then. Like where they have to like they would have to ship the film to the movie theaters and things like that.
Good point.
Speaking of movie theaters though, I did feel like it's like it's his campaign headquarters towards
the end. That was going to be my one last thing, is that his campaign headquarters is in an abandoned movie theater, which is so symbolic
of
the fact that he's a made for TV candidate. Like he's a manufactured film candidate. Yeah.
Yes. I thought it looked a lot like a movie theater. I wasn't sure if they showed that it was a theater.
Well, there's the thing where the news guy on election night is standing outside and you see all of the empty, what would be filled with movie posters where that would say now showing or coming attractions things, the frames. That's what they're called.
Yeah.
Outside the theater. And that's when I realized it was in an old movie theater.
Yeah. I mean, I really like that stuff. I like that, like, we can pick up on it. Do you feel like any of these nods to TV, to the political, to like actual real life people, to like the movie candidate? Do you think any of that stuff is too on the nose for this satire?
No, actually, I didn't feel like it. I think the reason I didn't feel like it was too on the nose is because of everything that's come after it that does feel like they ramp up the satire for satire's sake. A lot of movies nowadays would be ramping up the salaciousness and the satireness, and I like that this film plays it, at least by how it ages, a little more straightforward. Maybe it was considered satire in 1972, but I don't think even then it was like could be that funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of that like. I'm picking up on some of these things where I see what they're doing. And in some movies, I feel like that stuff can be really on the nose. Like in Barbie, you know, I talked a lot about this, like how it was felt very low hanging fruit. Like, I feel like there is enough nuance and kind of like deeper level thinking in this where it doesn't feel like it's just kind of low hanging fruit. So,
I mean, there's one movie that I'm going to suggest later that feels like the cranked up to 11 version of this movie.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a box office. I wish we did, but I am glad we got the date straight where this was.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, it made $2.5 million on a budget of $1.6 million, so not too bad. It made money back at least. But, you know, everybody was going to go on to bigger and better things later in the 70s. So.
Yeah. No, I feel like I am lucky this week that there are two movies that I saw that like there are movies that I see where I'm like, oh, these are good. But like two movies that I saw that I would recommend to like if somebody asked me, what should I watch? Incendies and The Candidate, like the two movies like I will be recommending to people more than just be like, oh, those were good movies I watched. Like these are like highly recommendable movies.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm really glad that we ended up picking this. Was this my suggestion?
I believe it was mine, right?
Let's see.
Pretty sure it was mine.
I think you're right. Yes, it was yours.
I won this week. Yes.
Yep. Good job. Good suggestion by you. This movie also came up just while we're talking about when this movie came up. It came up, of course, off All the President's Men.
Of course.
It was a suggestion by you off All the President's Men. So good job by
you. Yeah, this has been on my watch list, my Letterboxd watch list. It was on the very last page in the like final five of my Letterboxd watch list. So it's been on my watch list for many, many years.
Oh, nice.
many years.
Yes, and you also suggested this off of The Sting as well, back in episode 89. It did make the finals. Speaking of Brad Pitt, it lost to Spy Game, though.
Oh, man. So, that was also Robert Redford, though.
Yep, it was. Yep. Yeah. And while we're talking about the box office, we also like to talk about the Oscars as well.
Yes.
so this movie did win for best original screenplay, I believe.
I like that.
Yes. And I did find a fun tidbit that I wonder if you also noticed. Tidbit.
Please.
With this movie, we have now done, we've now done the 1972 best original screenplay, the 1973 best original screenplay, and the 1974. Move those all up one. So 1973 Oscars, 74 Oscars, 75 Oscars, all three winners of best original screenplay.
Okay, what was next? What's up,
Doc? So The Candidate.
No.
And then a movie we just talked about, The Sting, was came out in 73. That was the 74 best original screenplay.
Redford, what a 70s. Yeah.
And the 1975 Oscars Best Original Screenplay, a movie that we just did earlier this year, Chinatown.
Oh, yeah. So, take it down to Chinatown. More LA stuff. Yep.
So we did a little Best Original Screenplay ladder over the years on this podcast.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Now we can get into feedback. Kick things off with Ron. And Ron says, a very well-crafted dissension of the idealistic candidate to watered-down party clone when the win becomes possible. Love how McKay had the sudden realization he had no idea how to actually do the job after the election, too. 4 stars from Ron.
For sure. There you go. Robbie writes in and says, I could never run for office of any kind. I could not imagine having to schmooze everyone and to have an opinion on everything important that will appear the most amount of people possible.
Appease the most amount of people possible.
Okay, 3.5 stars for Robbie. Nice. You're going to take Alex.
Alex O's. Alex O says, this movie is tame by today's standards, but still manages to show the corrosive influence of politics on those that get into it. Robert Redford is extremely good and believable in the role of Bill McKay, as his hard edges get sanded away until he fits better into the mold of a proper, quote-unquote, politician. I was initially a little lower with my rating until the ending, which really stuck with me. All along, McKay expects to lose, even as he gains momentum and popularity. And at the end, we see the barely contained fear in his eyes as he realizes that now is actually just the beginning of the career that only the most hardened individuals can thrive in. I personally don't think it ends well for him, based on some of the common traps we have seen him falling into during his rise to power, mainly the cheating on his wife and the growing distance from those who he will soon represent. 4 out of 5 stars.
Yep.
I agree with all of that. I think, we didn't talk much about Robert Redford's acting in this, but I think
he's fantastic.
Yeah, I think, not just the uncontrollable laughing scene, but the look in his eyes when he has that realization that he won. I agree with Alex. Mm-hmm. That was really
the ending I really love. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Alex has one major nitpick. He says, one major nitpick I have is that we barely get to see the Lucas character as a human. Like, who is this guy? What drives him? He's just sort of there pulling the strings. He didn't really work for me, especially compared to the Bradley Whitford in the same role later on The West Wing.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good comparison. I think that's part of the idea, is that he's sort of a caricature of this type of political mover and shaker. Like, if there's something that's satirical, it's definitely the Peter Boyle character himself, who is so kind of sleazy and behind the back with the way he is trying to manipulate McKay and his actions, that like you're sometimes not even sure if he really wants him to lose, because you see him, like, he's at the political rally at the beginning, and then by the end you actually see that he like actually really falls for McKay and wants him to win, as a lot of people do, because you're like watching him evolve as a follower.
Yeah, no, I think him as this kind of, like, we see them having the scene where they have the conversation in the cockpit of the airplane.
Yeah.
And I think if you think of him as the pilot of this political machine, like, he's really driving so much of this, and like, he is just like, he is part of this political machine. Like, I think the fact that we don't know anything about him and what he believes, like, he's
makes
just
sense to me.
Yeah, like, he's just running this campaign at first to lose, And maybe and he starts believing. Yeah. But yeah, like, I think
it's... And I don't really need to know, like, what his favorite sandwich is or anything like that. Well, you know, I'm good.
I mean, I think there's so many people that, like, that we know that work on the Hill that are just, like, they aren't necessarily idealist people. They are campaign people. And they're probably, like, they're political strategists. And
they're happiest when they're involved in a campaign, not when they're just sitting on a staff.
Well, and I think, too, that, like, if you watch The War Room, you see that with the characters in The War Room, too, or the characters, the real-life people. But, like, that they're just driven to win, and that it's much more about just kind of, like, moving this machine forward versus kind of what they look for. So, but I do agree with Alex that, like, I think in general we don't know much about any of the characters. Like, even McKay.
I think that's fair. McKay's wife, like, we get that, like, she used to enjoy horseback riding, and, like, we don't really get anything else from his wife, really, at all. Mm-hmm. She's just sort of the politician's wife that you get in a lot of these, you know?
Well, and I think we don't even get from McKay himself. Like, we learned some about him, but I think, like, the fact that there's so many inconsistencies over, like, what does he want? Is he idealist? Like, does he really believe these positions? Like, I think that I would agree as a flaw. Like, just, we don't learn much about any of the characters. And one last thing, he does mention Bradley Whitford in The West Wing. I kept thinking that that Peter Boyle was Richard Schiff. Like, he looks like Richard Schiff from The West Wing.
The look is definitely patterned. Yeah.
Yeah. The ball with Richard glasses.
Schiff. Toby.
Yeah. So I've never seen The West Wing, but
good old Toby.
He was in that.
Yeah.
All right.
Travis writes in and says, "I thought this movie was fine. I enjoyed this watch, but I doubt I will revisit this movie. I expect this to be fairly forgettable. I have no real complaints, but no real accolades. 3.5, though. Like, I mean, that's a little above average."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, I just think for me, what worked more than this movie itself is just kind of how this movie is aged. I think if I would have seen this in 1972, maybe I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much as so much later. And this is just like, this movie is a fine wine the way it aged. All right. My brother Aaron has, yet another movie from the 70s about political corruption with themes just as relevant today. Redford is really good at this acting thing. Phenomenal ending. 4.5 stars.
Hey, and guess what? He's not such a bad director either.
There we go.
Jim writes in and says, "While The Candidate is far from Robert Redford's best movie or performance, it shows him carrying a movie by sheer force of charisma. His descent into the bowels of the political machine is both realistic and disheartening. 4 out of 5, hero of the movie, still Robert Redford." Nice. So there you go. I think that's exactly... I think Jim summed up my own thoughts really, really well. I think most everybody did. I mean, your nitpicks make a lot of sense. I think I'm like right. I don't think I'm as high on this as you are. But I still think that I would like rewatch this. And I think it's a really, really great example of a good political film and that is trying to say something about the moment that it was made, instead of being way over the top like some of the ones we would get later in the 90s and early 2000s. I'm gonna give this a solid 4. I'm about where the listeners are. The listeners are at a 3.92. I'm at a 4.
Yeah.
What about you?
You are a little lower than me. I'm matching my brother, 4.5. I just think so much of this movie works. It ages so well. Like, it is not quite a 5 because I do think, like, just like I said, there's some inconsistencies. I think we could have had a better version of the actual candidate. Like, I think that he's until the end and he's fine, but I just think we don't really know where he's coming from.
Yep.
And like, I know where they want to get him, but it almost feels like it's like square peg round hole where they're like, we want to show that he's this idealist character who becomes part of the machine, but then it just kind of doesn't quite track. So, 4.5 for me, but I do agree with, who was it? Was it Alex O who said that he doesn't think things end well for him? Yeah, I think
I agree. I think that the sequel to this is not great for
the
senator, our guy.
Is that what we call the sequel?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, it's not great for our guy Bill McKay.
Unless he becomes president in 2020. I mean, he is kind of Biden-y in some ways. All right, hero of the movie. I think it's gotta be Robert Redford. I would agree.
Yeah,
with Jim.
I'm gonna agree, and I'm not gonna argue. I don't really. Yeah.
I think honorable mention for Peter Boyle though.
Yeah, he's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think that Don Porter, who plays Senator Jarman, he's really perfect for he's just this white-haired old conservative really guy. Yeah. You can tell he's been senator for a long time, and nobody ever challenges him.
He looks like a stereotypical mm-hmm. Republican of the day who's you're not getting distracted by it being a super famous known face of an older generation actor.
Yeah,
you're getting a that guy of that generation who people may have seen in things, but they're not distracted by the name and the face.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you click over his filmography, the second movie on his list is Desk Set, which I do have him on my watch list, but he's uncredited. He's elevator operator in that movie. It's he is not a big name actor.
He's a guy that was around Hollywood for a really long time, but never really was a big that guy.
Yeah. And I do think what you said, comparing him to John McCain, I think that's a very good comparison. He does kind of look like John McCain. So, all right. Connections. So we talked a lot about it. We do have last week we had Martin Scorsese entering the 10 timers club 9 times as a director and 1 time as an actor. We have Robert Redford doing the same thing 4 times as an actor, 1 time as,
a director. Yeah, I'm here for it. Yep.
5 times.
And this is our second or third Peter Boyle. Do we have a third Peter Boyle?
I think just second.
Because Young
Frankenstein. Yeah. So other connections that I had written down, of course, all the TV production, the ads,
the reel to reel, the ads, the sponsorships,
even the debate feels like a game show. I don't know if that's intentional, but it does remind me of 21, where you have the two people on two different sides and a moderator asking them questions.
Yep, exactly. So. We also had the journalist who comes to the house to do a press shoot with his wife for Parade magazine. We had the whole scene with Charles Van Doren getting press photography for Time magazine.
Oh yeah. So, I was just laughing about Parade magazine, because I was oh, that's Mike Bloom showing up to do an interview.
Parade was big in the 70s.
Yeah, Parade once was doing political coverage, is now doing Survivor and Amazing.
No, that's right. Well, you know.
Title connection. I had Redford in Control, since he was the last movie, and he is the candidate who's in control in this movie.
I had a strange kind of headline that I'm not sure is going to work. It's in the notes. Redford prime time. Ready for prime time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a little bit of a tongue twister.
It's a little bit of a tongue twister. Okay, what do you want to go with yours then?
Yeah, Redford in control. Unless, Redford in production.
How about Redford in the lead?
Redford, okay. But he wasn't the lead in the last movie. He was the director.
He's the director. He's leading the...
How about Redford the leader?
Redford for America.
Oh yeah, Redford for lead for ladder. Nah. Redford the ladder.
No, that's too. Now we're getting off track.
Yeah. Okay.
What was your one? It was your first one. Let's go.
How about Redford in command?
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Because he's in command of the camera last week, and he's the commander, like the dog that bit everybody this week.
Yeah.
And maybe sometime in the future, Redford follows that path of being, or McKay follows that path of being California senator to the White House to scandal that we get if there we're getting some comparisons.
Yep. Right. Movie map. Did anything else come up for you besides All the President's Men?
Not movie map yet. We got to do other movies from this year.
Oh, yeah. Duh. Chinatown, obviously, with everything set in L.A. and around California, with the various environmental issues.
Didn't Nice Guys take place in the mid-70s and, around political candidates?
It did, yes.
Also, abortion. Just the fact that abortion really stopped me in my tracks when it was talked about in the debate. Of course, abortion being a aspect of a movie we did a couple weeks ago that
the scandal of Devil in a Blue Dress was also about a political candidate, right?
Oh yeah, a mayor. Yep.
The mayor. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
I mean, I guess this isn't a period piece because this takes place in the present time, but for us, it's a period piece.
Right.
So. Sure. Yeah, and then we had, I feel like the fact that we compare Brad Pitt and Robert Redford, we aren't backtracking to any actors from this movie, I don't think, but we did have Brad Pitt in The Big Short, and so we are sort of backtracking.
Sort of, yeah.
to the modern day time,
alternate universe thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. All right. Now movie map.
Anything else other than you wrote down other than all the pros? Yeah.
I mean, nothing that really stood out. I feel like that's such a good, good connection. Just
I mean, I had one if there, country. I had one if there was an assassination in this movie, it would have been Vantage Point, but you know, we don't get an assassination in this movie. So.
Well, glad that somebody could bring up Vantage Point because it doesn't.
I know, right? Because it's never going to come up. Yeah. Never coming up again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the only other one is like Forrest Gump in terms of being kind of a guy stumbling into history a little bit. Although a movie on my list for next week is a little bit better of a comparison to Forrest Gump. So. All right,
cool.
All right. One last thing.
My was the thing about the movie theater.
Sorry.
What do you got?
I brought it up earlier, but we get football on TV a number of times.
Yes.
And it feels like when I saw the first time, I was like, oh, they're interviewing the coach of the Rams.
And then
we're seeing Bill McKay's dad watching football and drinking Ham's beer, which that looked delicious. Just drinking a cold brewski, watching football with your dad.
With the pop top instead of the can. Yeah.
Like the cans look so small, too. I don't know if they were like 10 ounces back then or something.
What's the old fashioned style of can where they're a little fatter but shorter and they have like the pull tab tops instead of the pop tops,
So then it stood out. I was like, oh, we're getting football a second time. And then when we get the scene at the TV show when we're in the production booth, we see football on TV in the production booth. It's on one of the other channels. There's football going on. So I do think like there's a significance to football in this movie, and I think it's just the fact that it's a game. Competition game, trying to win, which we did kind of compare Quiz Show last week to having political stuff come up. And that was kind of why we picked this movie because of them, the political references. So maybe the football references in this are similar. Do you have any other thoughts on like football being a portion of this movie?
Not specifically. I just thought it was funny that the Rams were featured and then they left LA and now they're back in LA.
The circle of everything that was old is new again, right?
Exactly.
Political and football is old and new again. Yep. All right.
Yeah.
Anything else on this? No?
No, I think we're good. I think we elected the candidate. So there you go.
We did. All right. Well, we elected the candidate. Is he fit to serve? Let's figure out, because we're going to pick our movie for next week. Will we be following people into office? Will we be following the senator? To be determined. Once we do pick that movie, send in your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com. Yep. Send in your next movie suggestions off of this one and your score, feedback, all of that good stuff. All right, our ladder rungs kick off with Ron, and he has Lions for Lambs.
Yep.
Robert Redford in a movie focused on politics.
This came up last week as well.
Rod Redford also directed this movie.
Yep.
And then Election, 1999. Yep. This movie also came up last week. This movie was on my list.
Big one.
Movie focused on an election. I think that movie is also very relevant today.
25th anniversary of Election.
Oh, true. Yep. Good point. Yep. And then The Campaign, another movie on my list. This is a more this is a more humorous version. This is the Will Ferrell, Zach Galifianakis one.
Yes. Let's make sure we say Zach Galifianakis and not Rod Swanson, who I said last time this movie came up. Nick Offerman.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
No, if you want to see Nick Offerman as president, there's a movie that you can see with Nick Offerman as president.
Yep. All
right. Robbie has The Godfather, a 1972 movie.
Yep. The funny thing about The Godfather coming up is Robert Redford was the studio's choice to play Michael Corleone, even though he doesn't look Italian whatsoever.
Oh,
and they said under no circumstances is Robert Redford playing Michael Corleone. So there you go.
Yeah. And I mean, it is about a person's rise to power, too.
Yep, very true.
You know, nepotism as well.
Nepotism. Politics. There's lots of politics. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then The Campaign, which we just talked about. Travis nominates The Manchurian Candidate, the original one. Which I think good choice. I don't know what that year that is, but it's sometime in the '70s, I believe.
It's the mid '60s, yeah.
Okay. Alex O says two movies showing very different kinds of rising to political power, The Death of Stalin and The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Oh, Tragedy of Macbeth is actually a really good, interesting connection because of the rise to power there. Yeah, the way that the people behind the scenes manipulate Macbeth's rise to being the Dane of the Fife of whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fight from Scotland or whatever. Yeah.
A beautiful movie. That beautiful black and white movie. A movie that kind of just got lost in the shuffle of like post-COVID movies, I feel like.
I love Tragedy of Macbeth. I thought it was really well done. Yeah.
Another look at the inner workings of politics in the 20th century, A Face in the Crowd.
Just watched that for Criterion a few weeks ago. Really, really interesting movie. Yeah.
Nice. All right. And then Jim Crumley, his ladder rung. Tim Robbins wrote, directed, and starred in a 1992 satire, Bob Roberts, based on the SNL sketch. The title character is the anti-Bill McKay. He's a reactionary folk singer. He's a reactionary folk singer running for Senate in Pennsylvania against an incumbent, Brickley Pace. The guy's name is Brickley Pace. Crazy. Extravagantly intellectual, played by Gore Vidal. The film Bob Roberts is a reaction to both the political changes from the 60s to the 90s and to the relatively hopeful movies like The Candidate. What world is The Candidate a hopeful movie?
Bob Roberts, really, really good. I haven't revisited it since probably when I saw it in the mid-90s. But, I like Bob Roberts a lot. A couple of really good cameos in that film, too, from actors who were not breakout stars yet. Mm-hmm. They just kind of show up. Really interesting.
Yeah. Bob Roberts is one of the movies on my election year pre-watch list. So I will, whether we pick it or not, I'm going to be watching it at some point before November.
Nice. Guess what? You get to go first this week.
Oh, I get to go first. Oh man, I have not been rearranging my list as we've been going. So election was on my list. I could take that one off.
Actually, is that right? Let me double check that.
And the campaign also was on
sometimes
my list.
I remember to switch our names and sometimes I do not.
Whatever. You already told me I'm going first. I'm going first.
Yeah, you went first. No, wait, you didn't. I went first last week. Never mind.
All right, cool. All right. I will start with The Front Runner. That is the Gary Hart movie. You brought that up. At one point, I mentioned this movie in the 32 Fans Movies chat, and Sammy Chester went, oh, is that the Gary Hart movie? When I was talking about The Candidate.
Very relevant film, a film that I mentioned to the press box on Twitter that they should do, and then you superseded me by saying The War Room, and they talked about The War Room instead. Good job, you.
Alan Garfield, who was in this movie, he's also in Nashville. Has a lot of things going on, but a political candidate is one of the things. Mid-70s movie, kind of has that same feel of this. With just like that one, I think is just over like 1 or 2 days though. Speaking of Nashville, like a movie we didn't mention, but I do think Shampoo, if we had a movie atlas, Shampoo would be a really good movie atlas to this movie.
For sure.
I feel like Warren Beatty, I could have seen Warren Beatty in this role. Warren Beatty or Robert Redford are kind of
tied
together.
He'll make his own political movies later on.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Should I go with my next one, which is Bullworth?
That was the movie I was alluding to when I was talking about extreme versions of this movie that were made in the 90s, or one of the movies. Yeah, Bullworth is very, very transgressive.
I've never seen Bullworth, but I do know we have, that song Ghetto Superstar comes from Bullworth. I had to put that one on my list. That is also on my list of, election year movies. And I'm going to add one to my list, but I can't remember the name of it, where Warren Beatty dies. Oh, Heaven Can Wait. The reason why is because of the connection between Warren Beatty and Robert Redford being similar, but also we had so much football in this movie, and this is about an LA Rams player who gets killed and becomes an angel. I think I've seen the Chris Rock version of this, but not the original. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Heaven Can Wait is my next one.
Got it.
I said Nashville, and then Don Porter.
You did say Nashville. Okay. Yep. I thought you were just talking about Nashville. I didn't know that you were actually recommending Nashville. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, The Front Runner, Nashville, Bullworth, Heaven Can Wait, and then Being There.
Yes.
That Don Porter is in Being There. Don Porter plays McKay's father. Yep. Being There is about a man kind of stumbling into things, including politics.
Into political success. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of movie map adjacent to
Peter Sellers.
Forrest Gump. Yep.
Yeah, very Forrest Gumpy. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What else?
My last one, I will do Hot Rock. Robert Redford's in that. I just happen to watch this Robert Redford movie. I don't know much about it.
Hot Rock. The Hot Rock. Oh no. Yeah.
I think it's about a diamond, I believe. But okay. Yeah, Robert Redford's in it. It's actually right next to the candidate in terms of Letterboxd popularity on his list.
Okay, cool. I am going to go with another 1970s Robert Redford conspiracy thriller. We've already done All the President's Men. I've never seen 3 Days of the Condor. 3 Days of Condor. Let's do it. Yeah, it has come up a lot. Bob Roberts was on my list. Let's go through a couple of political candidate films. You mentioned Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Yep. Let's throw it on there. And then also Primary Colors is the John Travolta version of this film, where he's playing someone who's Bill Clinton, but not really Bill Clinton. He's sort of Bill Clinton.
It was either Primary Colors or Bulworth. I had to pick one or the other.
They can't call him Bill Clinton. Sean Penn plays a political figure in mid-century Louisiana, All the King's Men.
Where I thought you were going.
Nope. We mentioned Bobby Kennedy. Let's do Bobby. That's come up before, I know. Let's see, and that's 5. And then for my final pick, I'm going to go with another political satire, this one about political fixers, starring Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman. Part of this movie takes place in Hollywood as they manufacture a candidate and a problem, Wag the Dog.
Nice.
Yeah.
When you had All the King's Men, I thought you were going with Milk when you were talking about Sean Penn playing a candidate, especially in California as well.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Yep. All right. Why don't you read what we got and pick?
All right, great. So we have Lions for Lambs, Election, The Campaign, The Godfather, The Campaign Again, Manchurian Candidate, The Death of Stalin, The Tragedy of Macbeth, A Face in the Crowd, Bob Roberts, The Front Runner, Bulworth, Heaven Can Wait, Nashville, Being There, The Hot Rock, 3 Days of the Condor, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Primary Colors, All the King's Men, Bobby, and Wag the Dog. I get to go first.
I like how you say All the King's Men, like the movie The King's Men.
I had to I was trying to separate the words kings and men, but I couldn't help it. I couldn't help but blend them together. All the King's Men.
comma men,
yes. No, apostrophe. Yeah, S, men. All right, so... Bob Roberts. It's on your list. It's a movie you haven't seen. I think that the idea is spot on of why this film makes sense. I think it's the 20 years later, literally, from when this movie came out.
Oh, really? Okay.
Tim Robbins did this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's 1972 to 1992. It's another election year. It makes a lot of sense to do Bob Roberts to me. So that's going to be my listener pick.
Tim Robbins, also a actor/director.
Actor-director, yep.
Yeah. All right. I will pick off the listener list. I'm, like, tempted to pick The Campaign, but I feel like the movie sucks. Like, I can't imagine the movie's any good, so I don't know.
We don't really want to circle back to Will Ferrell, do we?
Again? Month we do our monthly Will Ferrell check-in.
God.
I feel like the Tragedy of Macbeth... I keep seeing tweets of like screenshots from that, you know, like clips from that movie and stuff. And like, I think people are starting to like reappreciate it a little bit. We do have a new Coen Brothers movie that just hit streaming as well, which I know you recently watched. And we have Denzel Washington, who's going to be in the High Low remake with Spike Lee, which that's not coming out for a little while. But I mean, you know, Denzel's great. Circle back to Denzel after we had Denzel a couple times earlier this year too. In Devil in a Blue Dress and American Gangster. So, yeah, I will grab Tragedy of Macbeth. I feel like
it's a great choice.
It'll be interesting to compare the rise and fall of that character versus the rise of a democratically elected character.
Very good point. Very good point. Off of your own list, because it was also on my list, because we talked about it earlier, or at least I alluded to it during our discussion of the candidate, I mean, Bulworth just makes too much sense. In the similar way to Bob Roberts, it just makes a lot of sense to go with Bulworth, see how this type of movie translates, you know, 20 some odd years later.
All right.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense to do Bulworth to me.
Cool. Off of your list, You know, Three Days of Condor, I do like that idea, mid-70s Robert Redford, but I don't know if there's, like, a ton of connections. Although, I mean,
it's, not enough there.
It's like, I mean, there's, like, some political, I mean, well, actually.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so don't say anything.
I have, like, seen it. I'm trying to think if there's enough there. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is, like, a very good connection. So
it's a really good follow-up because he's in Washington trying to do the things.
So he's the every man who becomes a senator and how he tries to change the system, but I just watched it.
Fair enough. No, it's a great movie. Everybody should watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I've never seen it.
Film kind of like Hollywood Politics Month continuing with Wag the Dog.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, we also have Dustin Hoffman, who was the partner of Robert Redford in
All the President's Men. Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, Primary Colors is on my watch list, as is Bullworth and Bob Roberts, my election year watch list. But yeah, I'll go with Wag the Dog.
And the thing is, I kind of like Wag the Dog. Like, some of it doesn't hold up great, but it's still pretty funny.
Wag the Dog is probably accomplishes more of the comedy that this movie sets that the candidate did not do. I have not seen Wag the Dog since it was in theaters.
It's been a long time. Was that 99 as well, or was that 97? Okay, okay, so we have Bob Roberts, all 90s movies. No, wait, Tragedy Macbeth.
No, Bob Roberts is movie, never mind. Oh, yeah.
Bob Roberts 92, Tragedy Macbeth, Bullworth, and Wag the Dog. So three modern political movies and one the template for all political movies in Macbeth.
Okay. Well, bad news. Bob Roberts looks like it is not streaming anywhere.
Not even YouTube.
Not even for rental. I could check and see if that handy, if we could do Bob Roberts on YouTube like we had for this one.
Do that twice in a row.
Let me pull up Bob Roberts YouTube real quick and see if...
The old Bob Roberts YouTube. Tragedy Macbeth, I believe, is still on Apple.
Okay, we do have Bob Roberts. If you do Bob Roberts full movie, it is on YouTube.
Nice. So, but it probably has ads every 6 minutes. Like,
not for me, but hour 42 minutes.
So about the same.
Lots of people in the comments saying thank you for posting this. You posted it three months ago.
Tragedy Macbeth is Apple TV Plus.
Yep, that is the only place you can watch it. Cannot rent it.
Correct. You can't even rent it. Which might make it a bit of a burden.
Yeah.
Bullworth, I'd be kind of surprised if it was actually streaming.
Yeah, rentable for Bullworth.
Rentable. Okay. And Wag the Dog feels like such a Max movie. Like Wag the Dog.
One would think.
Because Max is the good name for a dog.
Yeah. No, it is also rentable. So is Commander is a good name for a dog.
Nice.
Wag the Dog rentable. So really didn't pick much easily streamable stuff this week.
No, we did not.
The easiest to stream might be Bob Roberts on YouTube.
Yeah, I know. That's the irony. You know. How are you feeling? The thing is, every single one of these could come up the following week too, I think. You know, I mean, we're in political month now. Bob, I kind of want to revisit Bob Roberts. I haven't seen it since the early 90s. The rest of these I've all seen more recently, even if it was, you know, later in college or something. Two out of the four blind spots for you. None of them are blind spots for me. I really think it's between which you'd rather go with Bob Roberts and Bullworth, but the odds are we would watch the other one the following week.
Unless we get sick of this format.
This thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I
like Bob Roberts.
I think I'm more inclined to revisit Bob Roberts.
My only concern is, like, what if the studio comes for this YouTube clip in the next week and then people can't watch it?
Is it rentable?
No.
It's not even rentable?
Only can watch it on YouTube.
No. I don't think we could do that. I thought you meant it was still rentable.
No.
I don't think we could do
that. The only place you can watch Bob Roberts.
Let's not do it then. I think we got to go with either Bullworth or Wag the Dog.
Yeah. I also think because Tragedy Macbeth is only Apple,
I think I'm out on Macbeth, even though I love it. The Scottish play, if you will.
So do we want to go with, like, which analog for Robert Redford do we want to go with? Warren Beatty or Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman or Warren Beatty?
Yeah.
Okay, do you and they're both, like, hyper made for TV versions of a political thing. Like, they're, like, you know... the question is, does Bullworth hold up?
I don't know. I've never seen
Bullworth. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we got to go with your blind spot and go with Bullworth.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do have an actor director in Warren Beatty. Wrote and directed Bullworth.
There you go. We're back to
and it's very actor. Easy to find our outro song. I already know what this is because the song became very popular. It's a great song.
Yes, I know.
All right, cool.
Yeah, is it Bullworth with one L or two?
One L.
What I thought. That's how I spelled it. So I was like,
good reminder for everybody. Okay,
cool. Bullworth, one L, and congratulations, Zach. You have a point. Nice. Well, it's about Bullworth time you had a point.
True. Yeah. Christine Baranski is in Bullworth. Good job, Baranski's. Yeah.
So Zach, with that 1 point for Bullworth, you broke a 5-5-5 tie between me, you, and the listeners. So there you go.
Good job by me. Yeah. All right. Well, Warren Beatty star, that is what you are. we'll be doing Bullworth next week.
I'm excited.
Yeah, no, me too. This is a movie I remember when this came out in 1998. I never saw it, but I think like it was rated R, and it was right before like you were able to go see rated R movies without your parents. Like I feel like theaters kind of had that shift right around the late 90s. So all right, cool.
There you go.
Assistant director Frank Capra III.
Wow. Mr. Smith goes to Bullworth.
Yeah. This is you think this is Frank Capra's
grandson.
Grandson? Yeah. Wow. He's listed as an assistant director. Maybe we will be going to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. We'll be going way back in 2 weeks. Capra. All right.
Yeah.
Bullworth coming up next week. So send your feedback in at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com. Tell us what we should watch off of Bullworth and your feedback.
I already have a title connection too.
There we go. Save it. Write it down. All right. Brennan, what are you looking forward to watching this week?
Want to check out the first episode of The Sympathizer starring Robert Downey Jr. on HBO Max. That premiered on Sunday. Hadn't checked it out yet. Hoping to get to that. And then the penultimate episode of Shogun, which is what I'm going to immediately going to watch that as soon as we hang up here. Unless I decide to go upstairs and read a little more into the MCU book I'm reading right now while there's still daylight for the next hour or so.
Cool.
I might do that instead. But Shogun and The Sympathizer, those are what I'm watching.
Are you watching
Shogun? Haven't started it yet. That and Ripley, I'm sort of waiting, saving until there's really nothing to watch.
Okay.
Ripley on Netflix, I really, really want to watch, as well as Sugar. But I'm letting sugar build up a little.
Letting your sugar build up. My brother watched Sugar and he said it's amazing. He's like, call this me is a like diabetic. He says this show is made for me. For him, not for me necessarily.
Yeah, for your brother. It feels like your brother is a Colin Farrell fiend too. And so am I. So there you go.
Yeah. So I told him, I said, once some of these other shows wrap up, which is happening like this week, I'm like, maybe I can check out Sugar then.
There you go.
So all right. And I have All That Heaven Allows. On my library ladder list. So for Cirque 2 week.
Where are you going to find? Did you have to rent that from the library?
The library had it on Blu-ray. Nice. They had the Criterion on Blu-ray. So I'm going to watch that. I from what I've heard is Far From Heaven is basically a remake of All That Heaven Allows. Yes. So I might end up also bonusing and watching Far From Heaven, which has come up a bunch on this podcast as a suggestion. Also on my watch list challenge, I have to do a movie from the 50s. And so to circle back to quiz show, I might do Marty. Check out Marty.
That's one of my few Oscar Best Picture blind spots.
I learned last week that is the winner of the Best Picture in 1956. Although I do have some other movies. I do also have Harvey, which I feel like Marty and Harvey, I always connect
together. Oh, yeah. Harvey is the Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Giant Rabbit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Pickpocket, all these one-word 50s movies.
Oh, Pickpocket
titles.
Is so good. Yeah. Pickpocket's fun.
Touch of Evil is another contender, or Sweet Smell of Success. So all of these 50s movies that I have.
Have you done Man Escaped?
Yes. I did that for Criterion a few years ago. I like that a lot.
Really good, yeah.
Probably All That Heaven Allows and Marty by next week.
Cool. All right. Well, we're watching Bullworth. So
there we go. We're watching Bullworth. And so we'll see everybody we'll see you back on the campaign trail again next week.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Senator Jay Bullworth.
Man, look at the sky. Oh, stars are beautiful tonight. Look at
I didn't pull up any reviews. I forgot. The number one review on Letterboxd for this movie is, "I'm the girl who wants Robert Redford to sign her tits."
So review. We didn't read Megan the Librarian's review from a few years ago, especially at Geekback. Why don't you search that one down and tell us what Megan the Librarian said?
Well, I'd love our two librarians that we follow, not big fans of this movie. Todd the Librarian with 2 stars and no review, but for some reason he gave the candidate 2 stars. One thing I failed to mention about the candidate that I don't like is I don't like the poster at all. The poster does not
It doesn't represent the movie. At all. Yeah.
It's Robert Redford blowing a bubble. And like, so you're like, oh, this is going to be like a childish candidate. And it's like, he does break the rules, but like not that much. I think it's like not a great candidate. All right. Megan the Librarian, short but sweet. She said, very good role for Robert Redford.
There you go. Boom. Nailed it.
Back from June of 2020. Oh man, what a different time June of 2020 was. Sophie also says, tag yourself. I'm the woman who voted for Robert Redford because he's handsome. And another one, this is from Ian, a comical look at the cynicism of politics, grade A satire, and Robert Redford handsomeness. So lots of comments about Robert Redford being handsome. Yes. And then Russman says, I always vote for the candidate who likes my pets the best.
There you go. I like it. Yeah. You like my dog, man? Yeah, what are you talking about? You like my dog guy. Yeah.
What if you had a bulldog for Bullworth?
You're trying too hard. You're trying too hard to connect with the younger voters.
There we go.
All right, bye.